Namaste, everyone. Welcome to the Charvak podcast. This is your host, Kushal Nehra. So a few days ago, I had done a detailed podcast with Dr. Amit Thadani on Ayush and many things that Ayush Ministry talks about. And there was a tsunami of abuses hurled towards me. It's very interesting. All the claims were made by Dr. Amit Thadani. I was just asking questions. But everybody was like, Dr. Thadani to bade pyar se baat kar raha tha. Magar isko galiyan de dete hai. So then I was like, yaar, gali sunke maza nahi aaya. To thoda aur galiyan sunne ke liye, wapis ek podcast karte hain. This time I have chosen another interesting subject. So let me give you a brief background about why I've decided to talk to Dr. Nandita here. So fitness, dietary recommendations, supplements, all these things, you know, this is, if you say the Wild West, if it ever existed, I think fitness recommendation, dietary supplements and everything is truly the Wild West of the internet, where everything and anything under the sun is sold, and sold under quote unquote scientific or your ancestors. Everything is either your ancestor or everything is science. And then I came across Dr. Nandita Iyer's content. I've been following her work. I actually even read a book. So I was trying to understand who do I talk to. And then I reached out to her and she was kind enough to agree to come on the podcast. So Dr. Iyer, thank you very much for agreeing to come on the podcast.
Thank you, Kushal, for having me. And this is, of course, the topic of the hour. And I don't claim to know everything, but a discussion always reveals things better than just sitting and thinking in your own kind of echo chamber. So I'm really happy to have this discussion with you.
So Dr. Iyer, maybe we can start. This is just out of pure curiosity. Why did you decide to dabble into this side of, let's say, things? Like, why nutrition? Was there any particular reason where you decided, okay, I'm going to work on nutrition for any specific purpose?
So I studied medicine from Bombay University, now Mumbai University, and I studied MBBS. And due to some, reasons, long-term reasons we won't get into right now, I practiced only for a short while in an intensive care unit. And then I was working on different allied healthcare fields, such as health insurance. And then something that really caught my interest because of the creativity involved, because of the writing involved, and the overall understanding of the pharma industry and healthcare communications, I joined healthcare advertising. So that was also my big... that's where I actually got into writing and communications in the space of healthcare. And after that, I actually ended up, starting my food blog, because that's when I actually started cooking. I wasn't much of a cook before that. I barely knew to make tea. And this was in my late 20s. And when I started cooking and I wanted to just record my experiences in a blog, because those days, Blogger was very popular and it was very easy even for someone who's not, much tech savvy. So I just started off blogging my cooking experiences, and my focus was always healthy, and I was vegetarian anyway. So my focus was how to make the most of everything I make. So, how to add more veggies, how to add more protein. And I was always focused on the healthier aspect of cooking. And somehow those days there were not too many blogs. So this whole thing just took off. And I was surprised that so many people were actually coming onto my blog and leaving comments. And I found a whole community of food bloggers. This was in 2006. So, then I realized that since I'm not into medical practice and I'm in the space of food and my blog is growing so well, might as well I add some credibility to whatever I'm doing and saying. So I ended up doing a fellowship in applied nutrition. Frankly speaking, in medicine, nutrition features very briefly in this subject called preventive and social medicine, PSM, which is everyone's favorite period to bunk. And don't end up getting into that, more complexities of nutrition. And of course, even if I had studied then, when I did my medicine between 1994 and 2000, things keep changing in the space. Even what I had studied then would not be relevant today, and what was relevant in 2006 is not relevant today anyway. So I thought it's a good idea to at least get a hang of what goes on in the space, what are the aspects to be studied, fully well knowing that this is not constant and this is going to keep changing, but at least having a baseline level knowledge of things which I didn't study in the course of my medicine graduation. I thought it's a good idea to do that, which is how I combined my food blogging, my love for writing and everything, and that came to I did this course and it all came together that way.
No, but then now today you have a very significant presence on Instagram too. How was that switch? Forget the content bit, but the switch from, let's say, writing. Now, a lot of people that I come across, like I'm a bad writer. Like and somebody's like, "Sharam nahi aati, book likh raha hai." I still consider myself to be a very mediocre writer. Now, I struggle when it comes to writing, which is why I took such a long time to even write my book. But in your case, you were prolific in writing. You already have written multiple books. How was the switch from books to the video side of things?
So when Facebook started, Instagram started one after the other, right? All the food bloggers, because we are already blogging is also a kind of social media, if you will, and we all started our accounts there, not to quit our blog. Our blog was very much the mainstay of where we used to put out our content, but in the hope of finding more audiences and expanding our reach. And even those days with the more and more smartphones, we realized that everybody's not going to come to your blog, and discovery of your blog would be far tougher than discovering you on Instagram. And I joined Instagram literally the day it was launched, only for iPhones. I think that was 15, I don't know exactly how many years ago. So I think that was only to share, like if I did a post on my blog, I would just post that picture and a little bit about that recipe and saying, hey, go to my blog and get the full recipe. So that was the way I joined Facebook and Instagram. Even Facebook was for just posting links of my columns written elsewhere, or I never really used Facebook for, like, talking to friends or wishing, getting people to wish me on my birthday. That was not the intention of joining Facebook. And a lot of Facebook groups were there where you could post your blog links, and also it was purely by a blog marketing standpoint that I joined social media. And coming to video, in the fairly earlier days of YouTube, I had a couple of friends who said that, hey, you should definitely be on camera and you should do cooking. And although I hate being in front of the camera, I was pushed just enough to say yes to their proposal. And they said, you don't worry about anything. We'll get the crew, we'll get everything. And that I even don't remember how many years ago was that, maybe 10 or 9 years ago. And that time, you crew meant that you had like two cameras and lights. Like, literally, my whole house was occupied by these people who were coming to shoot me. And it was not like you just put a phone on your chota sa tripod and self-recording button press kiya, khud hi edit kiya. It was not like that. It was quite a time consuming thing. It was tiring, and it also had a lot of money involved, because then a whole day of shoot and so many people involved, and the editing and managing everything. So I started rather reluctantly, and it's something I didn't take to. Even now, I haven't. My YouTube is very erratic. I'm there sometimes. I post some videos. I don't post for years after that. So, but on Instagram, what happened was that I realized that I don't necessarily have to put cooking videos, because I think in the space of food, 9.5 out of 10 videos are on cooking. And there's just way too much cooking content, way too much very good cooking content also. And it's rather intensive to post cooking content. You have to shoot in great light. You have to make sure all the ingredients look good. You have to come up with some, outstanding recipe that people will go wow, because when people are scrolling, it needs to be something that will stop their scrolling and actually watch your video, or even something that the algorithm will serve somebody to see, right? So I figured that I did post my share of cooking videos on Instagram Reels early days, like just taking small clips and stitching them together on Instagram itself. But then I realized that there's this huge space for a professional, someone who's studied medicine, someone who's aware of the complexities and nuances in the space of nutrition. And even though my voice may not stand up to people with millions of followers who are talking utter BS and getting millions of likes and comments, I knew that I'm not fighting that battle because it's almost impossible for me. But in my own small way, if I can make a meaningful difference to someone who is constantly now fearing food because everything that you can eat or see or use in your life is going to cause cancer, you're literally so worried to do anything in your life. So if I can give that kind of peace of mind even to a few people, I would be very happy. So that's why I started this this kind of communication where I genuinely try to squeeze in as much information within 90 seconds, because anything in healthcare communications, it does not work in this extreme short form video where you're just saying, hey, this causes this, have this for losing weight. That just doesn't work that way, because nuance is the biggest aspect of anything related to health or anything related to science. It's never like just do this and this is going to cure your cancer or this is going to cause cancer. It's never as, and I always tell people, if something is so oversimplified, do not believe that, because that cannot be true. So that's why I decided that I'll try my best. I mean, it's tough how much to squeeze in information in 90 seconds and still not oversimplify to such an extent that you're just faffing your way through that 90 seconds. So that's, in short, my journey on how I started making these videos.
So, what do you make of the current landscape when it comes to dietary advice or nutrition in general in India today? Now, I don't claim myself to be an expert. This is one area that I've stayed away from. I have a very strong belief in knowing a subject before confidently commenting on it. I try to read as much as I can. I mean, when even when we were on the phone, I had shared whatever I tried to read. I told you. I mean, I try my best to read papers as much as possible. I was obsessed with sugar in my own weight loss journey. I found out cutting out sugar from my diet was the biggest help for me. Obviously, cardio and other exercises were there, but the one thing that helped me the most in my case was cutting out sugar. I'm not saying making it zero, but cutting it out significantly. It just fundamentally changed my life personally. Now, today, when I can look at the content when it comes to diets, you have so many people saying so many things, and the algorithm keeps feeding you all the time. So maybe we can start here. So what do you make of the content landscape today in terms of just nutrition in general?
Yeah, this is a very important topic and something which I keep overthinking about all the time, because each time I'm putting out a video, I'm thinking about this entire landscape in which I'm putting in my video. So how is it going to do? Is it going to make any sense? And I've realized a few things in the current scenario. It is what the algorithm promotes and what gets the content creators like a million views or a million likes is what they are going to continue posting. Even if it means just flogging a dead horse, they are the primary motive for most content creators in today's social media is not to do any public service. It is to grow your audience, get better brand deals. And if you're not getting brand deals, then somehow monetize this huge following, even if it means just growing your own brand online and then trying to, transfer those people who are your fans on social media into buying your next health program or weight loss or something that just feeds that funnel, right? So I think the first point I noticed a lot is that all this majority of this health advice is coming from completely unqualified people. They may be qualified as engineers or architects or whatever it is, but they are not qualified to be giving this kind of health and nutrition advice. And I feel primarily the extreme confidence they have to put out information which is completely non-scientific, not evidence-based, unproven, is because they have nothing to lose. Now, someone with a medical degree will always be like 10 times cautious before saying anything online because it's their whole education, it's their degree at stake. So I feel that they just don't have anything to lose. Even someone who studied medicine for 10 to 15 years will worry about, you know, the people who are in this space and who appreciate this kind of information, they just lap it up and immediately they'll start following. And anybody who goes against it, they'll start fighting with them rather violently in the comments. And these are the same people who will go to a doctor with 10 to 15 years of experience and question, how did you prescribe me this medicine, even if it's just a paracetamol? Oh, what are the side effects? These are all chemicals. These are strong medicines. So the kind of distrust they have in a qualified professional who spent 15 years of his or her life studying, they will trust a complete stranger on Instagram who's just giving you some random information and, 15 to 90 seconds and just fly with that information and also share it with million other people. So I think that's the first thing. And, each time I see this, I am going to read out this quote by Bertrand Russell, who says that the problem with the world is that the fools and fanatics are always so certain of themselves and the wiser people so full of doubts. So when I have self-doubt and I feel, oh my God, I'm going to overthink this topic for 4 days before I put out something, I take solace from this quote that don't worry, you are in the right space. Because if you were just like a content generating machine and putting out the first thing that comes to your head, and even if it meant spreading misinformation or spreading fear among people, and if you thought that was okay, then something is wrong with you. This is not wrong. So that is the first thing, completely unqualified people giving out advice. Second thing is completely polarized. So either you take one ingredient and you say, this is a superhero, this is a cure-all, this will make you lose weight, grow your hair, glowing skin, like literally everything under the sun. Or take one ingredient and say, this will cause cancer, this will cause you to get bald, lose all your teeth, like go the other extreme, So I feel like this never works in the field of nutrition. One ingredient can't be a superhero and one ingredient can't be like a super villain. It's you have to see the bigger picture. And when your diet in a whole plate, in a whole day, in a whole month, in a whole year, everything counts. It's not just one thing you ate on one day, which is going to cause like destruction. So this principle I see when people on Twitter who are advocating carnivore diets, like carb shaming. You can put your plate of like dal chawal and you'll see how many galis you will get. Hey, where's the protein? Just complete vegans. So there's a whole cult out there, and you post anything with milk, people will come after you. So I feel that these kind of specific cults who are so polarized that anything outside of what I believe or what I eat is just wrong, and I must vehemently oppose that. So I realize also the other thing where anything Indian you post, like, the silly video, I make these parody videos mocking these influencers. And unfortunately on Instagram, I didn't write it on top of the video that it's a parody. I wrote it in the captions. So people have happily downloaded that video and now it's gone viral on WhatsApp, where people are actually believing every word I'm saying is true and saying, see, and this was about the comedy about the cosmic power of the sari and bindi, in which I had put S in brackets, but this is too subtle for people to catch, right? So now people are saying, see how important it is to wear sari and wear bindi and I'm getting these things back in my family WhatsApp group saying, very well said and all. I'm like, I don't know where to hide my face and cry. I'm either going to put a laughter track or a parody alert in like all in the red color font on my video now. Because see, anything you say Indian, you appreciate Indian culture, Indian medicine like Ayurveda or you Indian food, you are going to grow like crazy. Now that video of mine, for all the wrong reasons, it's reaching 500k views, which is huge for me. And my following, which was growing at a snail's pace, has suddenly gone up by 2000 in like 2 weeks, which is crazy. Because I was not even growing by like 20 in 2 weeks until now. For all the wrong reasons, because people are not even reading that it's this parody. I praise this Indian art. And actually, I'm joking that UNESCO has declared sari as the world's best attire. And people are like, yes, 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 this is, this is what we need to hear. Nobody is reading the description and people are just liking and sharing my video. Of course, the first 2 days, it was seen by the audience who follows me on Instagram. So the algorithm shows first to your followers who know where I come from, what my beliefs are in this space. And all those comments were like, hey, I'm laughing and this sarcasm is on point. But after a while, when Instagram started showing it to outside my following, like non-followers, they don't know me at all. So they're just believing every word I'm saying, like verbatim. And I'm actually worried about my image now on WhatsApp and what are people going to think about me for saying the utterly like craziest things. And it's being like, so this is what this polarized thing, right? And the same video I posted, I myself had posted on Twitter, I had both the right wing and the left wing bashing me. Left wing thinks that I'm being sanghi by promoting sari and this. And the right wing is bashing me that, hey, how dare you mock sari? I said, I am wearing a sari in this video and I wear sari most of the time. So in what way am I mocking sari? I'm mocking the people who are making such idiotic reasons for you to wear sari. And it's not that I'm saying don't wear sari for these reasons. Wear it because it's beautiful, it's our culture, it's graceful, but don't try to find any further scientific reasons for that, right? So this whole polarized aspect of this food, nutrition, even like I just extended it a bit to culture, but just to give you an example of how this is working these days. Third thing is absolutely no nuance, and I don't blame it on anybody because there's no time. There's only so much you can talk in 90 seconds and explain nuance. There's no depth. And anything in the space of food, you can't just give it without a context or a nuance. At least Twitter long form or YouTube long form videos give you the opportunity to do that. But how much of your audience is actually willing to spend that much time reading a 300, 400 word post on Twitter or a long form video on YouTube? Only the very clued in knowledge seeking people will do that. So I don't think that long form is going to work on this audience with a very short attention span who just want like instant facts and gratification. And the other point about the current scenario is that the tone is so shrill. Now, if you just want to do this fear mongering, hey, this thing has like 100 grams of sugar, 500 grams of this health drink has 450 grams of sugar. Boss, I am never in my life going to have that 500 grams at one go. If I have 2 spoons of that, how much sugar am I getting realistically? So for those who want to avoid sugar completely, yes. And those people will also read the nutritional label. So they know exactly what is there in what. So I think you can't scare people with a mellow tone. And I think I had posted this tweet or something like the top tip to grow your any account to a million followers in no time is to just take any one ingredient or any one of your daily practices and just link it to cancer. That's it. You're going to that video guaranteed will have like million views and instant following growth. So if you see many of these influenzas, I like to call them, I don't like the word influencer. So these health influenzas, every video, this causes cancer, that causes cancer. Like their standard format is X causes cancer, X mein roz ek ek dalte jao, or So then people will start sharing, hey, tea causes cancer, coffee causes cancer, like breathing causes cancer, like, just everything. So I think these practices are all developed to just keep getting more engagement, as I told you. And even personally, they may not believe in this, and they might themselves be drinking tea and coffee, but this is what gives the engagement and the growth, and not necessarily the accurate information. So I think they're just playing into the algorithm. This is what the algorithm wants. This is what the people are feeding it. And in general, the people who are actually scrolling through all this are ultimately losing out.
Yeah, I can understand where you're coming from because this is something I struggle with all the time as a content creator because I was one of the earliest podcasters in India. I started very early and I have never like, people find it very hard to believe. I was like, yaar, mere numbers काफी decent है. तुझे लगता है मुझे ad offers नहीं आते होंगे? I mean, I've told this to people. I was like, तुमको लगता है मुझे ad offers नहीं आते होंगे? मैं करता नहीं हूँ. मुझे आते हैं और मैं ना बोलता हूँ. एंड सम ऑफ देम हैव बीन सो ह्यूज इन टर्म्स ऑफ मनी. आई स्टिल से नो. लाइक यू नो आई ऑलवेज टेल देम दैट लाइक आई एम नॉट द फर्स्ट वन. माय इंस्पिरेशन वाज पुलेला गोपीचंद हु वाज वंस ऑफर्ड एंडोर्समेंट डील्स बाय कोला कंपनीज. आई वाज अ यंग किड एट दैट टाइम लुकिंग एट पुलेला गोपीचंद एंड आई वाज इंस्पायर्ड बाय दैट मैन. आई वाज लाइक ही इज अ मैन हु स्टूड अप फॉर प्रिंसिपल्स. Who stood up for something? Who said नहीं ये पीने से बच्चों को हानि होती है, मैं इसको नहीं एंडोर्स करूंगा एज अ स्पोर्ट्समैन. एंड ही वाज एट द पीक ऑफ हिज करियर. ही हैड वन द ऑल इंग्लैंड चैंपियनशिप. नाउ दैट्स माय हीरो. आई एम नॉट जजिंग स्पोर्ट्समैन हु एंडोर्स कोलास, बट आई एम गेटिंग इंस्पायर्ड बाय पुलेला गोपीचंद. सो व्हेन आई इट्स नॉट लाइक ब्रांड्स डिडन कम टू मी एंड सेड तुम ये कर लो. आई एम लाइक, तुम मेरे को ये बताओ कि ये करने के बाद मेरे कंटेंट को कितना कंट्रोल करोगे तुम लोग. And that's where the cookie crumbles. That's where the rubber meets the road. They don't say anything, but it all starts after 2-3 months. Then they'll be like, ये विषय के बारे में बात मत करो. इसमें तुम रिलीजन को क्रिटिसाइज कर रहे हो. द आई डू क्रिटिसाइज रिलीजन. आई डोंट क्रिटिसाइज वन रिलीजन. आई डोंट स्पेयर एनी वन. दैट्स माई थिंग. आई एम अ इक्वल अपॉर्चुनिटी ऑफेंडर. एंड दैट्स वाई आई मीन इट इज अ ह्यूज फाइनेंशियल हिट. आई कुड टेक इट बिकॉज ऑफ माई प्रीवियस अवतार एज एंटरप्रेन्योर. सो आई कुड बी लाइक यार तू मुझे क्या मारेगा, मैं तो खुद को मार रहा हूँ, काइंड ऑफ अ मोड में हूं मैं. सो यू नो आई ऑलवेज वर्क इन अ सेल्फ डिस्ट्रक्शन मोड कि यू कांट टच मी. आई एम सेल्फ हार्मिंग माई सेल्फ. बट दिस दिस एंड एंड आई एम विच इज वाई आई रीच आउट टू यू बिकॉज देर आर बेरली एनी बडी हु इज एन ए क्वालिफाइड प्रोफेशनल. मोस्ट ऑफ दीज पीपल दैट आई केम अक्रॉस वेन आई सो इन माई एंड आई एम नॉट गोना टेक नेम्स बट दीज पीपल that I came across when I was researching before I wanted to talk to you. How I came across you was a very interesting story. I was looking at these faffers. I call them faffers, people who faff for money. And they say all kinds of batshit crazy things. And I can guarantee you, if I talk to them and I did a Socratic method with them, because which is my training as a student of philosophy, I am trained in the Socratic method. And if I started counter-questioning them, in 10 minutes, these people will be exposed because they don't know what they're talking about, right? They will, but they misguide kids. And then suddenly the YouTube algorithm actually recommended you. And I was like, hang on, this one makes sense. Oh, so, and then I realized, okay. And I did not find you on Instagram because I don't go on Instagram. I actually found you on YouTube. So other people taking your clips just to on you or something of that sort. And I was like, no, hang on, the disser actually makes no sense. The doctor here makes more sense. And that's when I started. And I always say this, two things are not innate. Being civilized, you have to learn how to be civilized. And two, being rational. Being rational is also not innate to you. You have to learn how to be rational. The biggest tragedy of our discourse today, and which is why I am so glad and so happy about the work that you do. And how does it matter? Another aspect, and I'm glad you touched upon this, that, you know, the left will get mad at you for something, the right will get mad at you. So, oh, तेरे पेट में जोर आ रहा है वो लेफ्ट विंग राइट विंग थोड़ना है, तू मतलब तू पागल आदमी है, तू क्या बातें कर रहा है. And I find this all the time. Like I have never hidden my political leaning. It is a matter of openness that I tell people who I vote for. In fact, I believe that if you're coming to my channel, whether as a guest or as a listener, you should know who I vote for, is because, you know, sometimes people hide these things. In fact, most people hide these things. I don't. I'm very open about everything I do. I just put it out in the open. And this entire trend, and you know, you bucking the trend and you taking this on was a breath of fresh air, at least for me. But now I want to focus on the nutrition aspect. Now, you have consistently, whatever I have read in your work or consumed your video content, you have always, I like to call it the Buddhist way. You always, you always preach the middle path in nutrition. Now, why did you come up with this? Because it's very, you know, like you just gave the example of sugar also. You don't say go cold turkey. You never say that.
Yeah.
And you also, I remember on our phone call, you had told me, Kushal, how can I tell things to people which I don't do myself? I clearly remember you telling me that.
Yeah. So, you know, I feel in this space, when it comes to food and nutrition, everybody is different. And be it their genetic makeup, their socio-economic background, their culture, their beliefs. So, literally no two people can agree on what is the right thing to eat or what is healthy for me. And now adding some science to that, literally no two people have the same gut bacteria. So they've even done research that a pair of twins eating the same food, in the same house, in the same setting, and like, you know, even they, their gut bacteria are different because... And that is how someone, you know, in a pair of twins, one may crave more sweet, one may crave more savory, because it's the gut bacteria that demands the kind of food. Most of the cravings are related to that. Now, in this kind of extremely, extremely diverse scenario, how can you just put one diet fits all, or, you know, one kind of, like everybody do intermittent fasting? You know, a lot of intermittent fasting, for example, men are able to do it very easily, but women feel that their hormones are affected, they get severe headaches. Even someone who's not really craving for food, but you get so many other kind of, you know, that you're not feeling too good about it. And I was one of the earliest adopters of intermittent fasting, and then I realized that I'm just getting such severe migraines. I just could not. I'm happy to go without food for 20 hours, but this headache is killing me. And I can't go about my day, and I can't go about my life with this kind of headache. So I think, and people who are advocating like carnivore diet on Twitter and things like that, do you know that how difficult it is for one, expensive, two, if someone is a vegetarian or doesn't want to eat meat, or even in carnivore diet, you're expected to eat everything. Or in India, most vegetarians are eating chicken or fish. It's too much to expect them to eat meat at every meal. And even a non-vegetarian in India, he's maybe having a small chicken curry, but there is also a sabzi, there is roti. It's not like an American who's eating like a half pound steak and just some sauce on the side, right? Even our meat-eating diet is very different from the Western meat-eating diet. So trying to push any one agenda on people, or saying at the other end, go completely vegan, don't even have milk, dahi. So like this polarized thing is why I am in the middle. That I feel that, one, it is impossible to convince people that this is the right thing to eat. And you should not, because depending on how their upbringing, their comfort level with food, what makes them feel good, it's not the same for everybody. So I think that is one big reason why I feel, you know, that the middle path is the best path. And the middle path is what can be followed for possibly the rest of your life. So even people who do keto and they lose a lot of weight, but can you, I don't know how many people are possibly doing it for the rest of their lives. How can you stay without carbs for the rest of your life? And I think in a way, see, extreme things are possible for a very short period of time, but it's the middle path that you can stay for the rest of your life. And I think these are some very basic logical reasons to why I believe in this. See, even coming to the topic of sugar, Like every bachcha knows that, yeah, sugar is evil, and everybody knows it. But what we eat, even our taste buds have some receptors only for sweet, right? So, and our food, what we eat, is not only for sustenance, it's not only calories and macronutrients, it's also to feel good. It's also for a mental thing. Like you go to a wedding and you enjoy that kind of special wedding food. Like I've given this example in my book, Everyday Superfoods, also. Like in the winter weddings, you eat this cold vanilla ice cream with hot gajar ka halwa and all that. And in that, no, like nothing keto can become a substitute for that pleasure and that fun that you're enjoying a wedding or something nice your mom makes for you. I think people who say, no, I'm on keto diet, I won't eat this, you are missing out on a big aspect of connection, bonding with your mom or whatever happened in that moment. So food is not just calories and sustenance. And I think some portion, like at least 20, 25% of your food life has to be reserved for these better things in life where you actually enjoy food, you enjoy that good dessert. Again, I'm not a fan of people making keto desserts and these days, and trying to make dessert healthy. That kind of skews your brain that this is healthy food, so I can eat as much of it as I want. Whereas when you're eating a properly decadent dessert made the way it should be made, you're telling your brain, this is dessert, this is an indulgence, I'm going to eat it slowly, enjoy it, but I'm not going to have unlimited portions of it because I don't want to fool myself that this is healthy in any way. But everything I eat need not be healthy. It cannot be that way. And we can't live our whole life that way. So I think this gives some idea about the kind of moderation I like to follow, both in my life and the content I write about. And not to be dismissive of anything as well, because everything may have some benefits. Maybe it's not right for me, or maybe it's not right for somebody else, but someone who just loves eating meat, the carnivore diet may be perfect for them. And if it helps them reach their health goals and weight goals, then so be it. But the thing in our, I think among us is that if one person is running, they will try to make everybody a runner. Like, hey, running is very good for you. You should start running. Or if one person turns vegan, they will try to make you vegan. So that we should avoid and fa follow what works for us, not try to convert others to our way of thinking or believing or being.
So that's the million-dollar question, right? How does one figure out what works for them? I mean, it's not that easy. Like, I'll give you an example. I figured out what works for me is my personality is I am someone who works well when he goes cold turkey. Like, if I dump something, I dump something. Then my brain doesn't want to touch it. But if I keep trying things, I can't do them in limited amounts. It's just something I can't do. I will hog the whole thing then. I can't eat two biscuits. I will eat the whole packet. That's just my nature. That but I find it very easy to not even think about the biscuit packet. Like, even if it's there, I will not touch it. But if I touch it, I will finish the whole thing. That's just a personality trait I have. It's my flaw. It's my personality flaw. So how did I work around it? I decided if I don't want to eat something, I go cold turkey. Now, everybody is not like me. So in your experience of, talking to people, meeting people, how does one go about, like, how do I decide what works for me?
Definitely by trial and error. And if you can't figure out what works for you, nobody can. See, I'll explain. There are two kinds, right? One is suppose you're going and meeting a professional nutritionist or someone who's like a functional medicine doctor who tries to analyze your diet and your lifestyle and suggests what is good for you. At the most, they're going to give you half an hour, 45 minutes. And in that much time to figure out your entire life, how your mind works, what your problems are, what are your cravings, what makes you reach out for food. Without understanding all this, for that person to give you a solution, it is impossible. So let alone that person who is trying to make a reel in 60 seconds and trying to solve all your life's problems in that one Instagram reel or YouTube short, right? It is impossible for others to figure out how you should work out your diet and your lifestyle to suit whatever your goal is. So, also the advantages of us figuring it out ourselves is that we have an infinite time to do that. I mean, relatively infinite time compared to what a professional may have with you. We have a no holds barred insight into our own selves to understand what is it that, I'm bored, so I keep thinking about that biscuit packet in the kitchen, or I'm feeling, and all these Hollywood movies have glamorized this whole thing after a breakup, someone sitting with a 1 kg tub of ice cream and eating it. Those kind of things, only we know how we do this, because this is not necessarily we go around telling our doctor or a nutritionist that you're seeing. And I think, and it's like, this is like these habits have to be dealt with in baby steps. So definitely, I think you have done a great thing, because you have understood that this moderation in certain aspects will not work for you. And then going cold turkey is the best way, and you have managed to do that. So, but without the knowledge that you are not a person for moderation, it would have been very difficult for you to even go cold turkey, because you'll keep thinking, "Arey, main ek do to kha hi sakta hu na." But you know that you will not stop at one and two, and that also is a kind of a self-awareness and being very deeply in tune with yourself to know that what works for you. So I think it's good to have overall broad guidelines from professionals, but ultimately how to implement it in your life and do this day in and day out is definitely going to come only from within you. And see, all this food knowledge and everything is within us. It's nothing new that anybody is saying. And anything that's very new and very drastic has to be definitely taken with a pinch of salt, because we don't know if it's even tried, if it's tested, or if it's only anecdotal and it's not evidence-based, because literally everybody who's talking on the social media is talking anecdotal. Yeah, maine ye kar diya. Anybody who's lost 5 kilos of weight themselves is a weight loss expert. That's how it goes, right? So I think you yourself are the only person who can be the most fair, the most patient, and the most insightful about your own self.
So what do you think about calorie counting?
See, it's a good way to get some broad insight again, because see, especially Indian food, we have so many different items, little of everything. Rice is not something that's just easily calculatable. Now, if I'm cooking basmati rice and I'm putting it in 1 cup, I may get, say, 100 grams. But if I'm putting like the rice that we South Indians eat, short grain rice, which is cooked slightly softer, I may end up stuffing 150 grams in that same cup. So these kind of measurements don't work easily. Like some sambar may be thick, some sambar may be thin. There is no what do you say, consistency in the kind of food we cook. So trying to at least initially weighing out and understanding gives you a broad idea, am I overeating? Because a lot of times what we think is that, hey, I'm making millets, I'm making sambar, I'm making vegetables and everything. I have made it myself with very little oil and it's all home cooked. So if I go for second or third servings, it's fine. This is all healthy food. But ultimately, we have to understand that even extra virgin olive oil is super healthy, but you can't have a salad like they serve you in the restaurant. Salads are so delicious because they put a ton of dressing, which you don't put at home. So that dressing is all calories. So understanding this whole aspect, it helps to count, weigh your food, count calories. I think it's good as a broad guideline, like how I used the CGM, continuous glucose monitor, for a few months to understand what food has what kind of impact on my blood sugar. But I definitely didn't want it on me all the time, because I found that it was stressing me out a big deal, and finding out what became made it orange, what made it red, when their orange and red are still within normal limits as far as general medicine goes. They are trying to optimize it for longevity and some other things, and not exactly this. I even gave this feedback to them that boss always showing me in the red, even when it's at 135 or 140, is not a good thing, because I'm unnecessarily getting anxious when I'm not a diabetic or I'm not a pre-diabetic, and these colors and the kind of graphs that you're showing me for some, like the food that I'm eating is fairly decent in terms of its protein composition, fiber composition, and this is not something that's helping me. So yeah, I think it's like the CGM or any such thing that comes, to help you show show you the road. But you can't forever take it as a crutch, because in that case, what happens is that we totally lose touch with our internal mechanisms, which tell us, "Hey, now you are full. Now you are hungry. I'm going to have an extra hard day today, so it's okay for me to eat some carbs." Our internal mechanisms of regulating this, we've completely lose touch, because ultimately we are counting everything. Okay, this is 5 calories, this is 12 calories, and you can't do this for life. It is extremely dysfunctional way to deal with food. And in my first book, I had given the calorie count of every recipe for 100 plus recipes, because that was the need of the publisher, because it was a healthy thing and you couldn't think of a healthy cookbook without the calorie count. But if you personally ask me, I would not say, I would not recommend this for a long time, because it really ruins your relationship with food.
Now, in my case, what I realized was calorie counting is just next to impossible. You can't do it. It's not a practical, doable thing on a daily basis. But what worked for me was I just skipped a meal. Just skip a meal. I just have 2 meals a day. I have breakfast around 10:30. Then I have my second meal, which is my literal last meal of the day, which will be at around 3 p.m. in the afternoon. I intermittently fast because it works very well for me. I don't have any migraine, anything of that sort. I actually feel very good after that. And then either in the night, sometimes after the podcast, I go to the cafe and I have an ice mocha, or before the podcast, I'll go to the cafe and have an ice mocha. And that is literally my eating routine for the day. In spite of that, there are times where I go out with friends and I end up eating a third meal. And my body has become so sensitive to eating a third meal now. If I eat a third meal, I put on weight like this. Instantly, my weight goes up because my body is just not used to it. My body is used to mujhe khana mat do raat ko, and it's just fine with it. Like nothing happens to me. I've checked my parameters. I mean, the parameters are fine. Everything remains fine. But once again, when I look around, everybody says weird things all the time. Like, कोई बोलता है कैलोरी काउंट करो, कोई बोलता है ईट व्हाट योर एंसेस्टर्स एट. अरे भाई, कौन सा एंसेस्टर ये बता दे मेरे को. दिस इज माई सीरियस क्वेश्चन, बिकॉज 70,000 years पहले भी जो आए थे वो भी मेरे एंसेस्टर ही थे ना. सो शुड आई ईट व्हाट देट. नहीं, सडनली आई हैव क्रिएटेड अ लाइन एट द इंडस वैली. नो, इंडस वैली पे भी नहीं किया है. वर द पोर्चुगीज योर एंसेस्टर्स, बिकॉज अन्नी वो आलू तो वो लाए, तो वो तुम्हारे एंसेस्टर का खाना है, तो तू आलू खाना छोड़ने वाला है. मतलब क्या, नहीं, ईट व्हाट योर ग्रैंड मा कुक्ड. अरे बगर वाय, व्हाट इफ योर ग्रैंड माज फूड सक्ड एंड इट वॉज द मोस्ट अनहेल्दी फूड ऑन प्लैनेट अर्थ. आई मीन, वाई डू पीपल गिव सच उल जलूल एडवाइस इज माई क्वेश्चन. लाइक, हाउ डू आई डील, लाइक माई फ्रेंड्स समटाइम्स, यू नो, दे लुक एट माई ट्रांसफॉर्मेशन, दे स्टार्ट आस्किंग मी, जैसे कि मैं कौन सा बड़ा वर्ल्ड क्लास एक्सपर्ट हूं, मुझे थोड़ा पता है क्या करना है. सो
So I
हाउ
think
डू आई
that
डील
it
विद इट?
all started from Michael Pollan's, don't eat what your great 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 grandmother wouldn't recognize as food. I'm very bad at remembering these quotes exact, but it's something along these lines. And while it was a very good, a very good statement to understand that stick, basically it means stick to non-processed whole foods as far as possible. That's the simple thing. Instead of saying ancestors and all that, turning corn into cornflakes, turning milk into some vegan cheese, all this is ultra processing. And I'm not saying milk, but some other alt milk into some alt cheese and all that. That is something your grandma wouldn't recognize as food. And I think that's what they mean by eat what your ancestors ate, is that try to stick to food. Try to stick to the more natural form of food. If a peanut chicky is having just peanut and jaggery, and if a peanut butter I see in the supermarket has 10 other ingredients, then yeah, maybe chicky is a better option. So it's just a very simple way of understanding food, and the it's proven that highly ultra processed food, eating it all the time is not good for anyone. You're better because it also completely throws your own self-regulatory mechanisms out of the window, and you can eat like 20 packets of chips, but you can't eat 20 boiled potatoes. You know, your body will like violently refuse that. So I think just understanding that and trying to eat, and again, it's no harm to eat chips once in a while, but the whole problem is these foods are made with so much research into that addictive potential of them. They want to make it addictive, which is why we find it very difficult to stop at one and two. And if that is our problem, then we are better off not eating it at all. But definitely, like, you know, no one craves for a broccoli. No one craves that, arey, mujhe aaj char panch bananas khana hai. I want to eat a kilo of broccoli today. Nobody wakes up in the morning thinking like that. So you mean those foods are safe because they are not programmed to make you addicted, and you're not going to, be so addicted to eating broccoli any day. So I think you're safe from being addicted, and it's also good for you. So that's a good way to think about when anyone tells you eat what your ancestors are eating. I assume this is the meaning that they're trying to convey.
You know what the fundamental problem with this argument is? 500 years age, we are their ancestors.
So
Hum
they'll be
kya
eating
kar
chips and whatnot.
So
So
imagine this.
that line of argument needs to stop at this generation, and let's not carry that forward.
It is only applicable till the year 2050. After that, every time somebody says your ancestors, no, your
Please don't
ancestors
do that.
sucked. So this is why I find these arguments so hard to digest, and which is something it scares me. It scares me is because I 100% agree with you that the safest option is try and avoid eating processed food as much as you can. That's the only way out. Long story short, ghar ka khana khao. Basically, long story short, ghar ka khana khao. I mean, just the small things I do. I don't even know if I'm right. Like now that I go out to eat, देखो रेस्टोरेंट में तो खाओगे ही आप खाना, मगर अगर आप महीने में 4 बार जा रहे हो, हाइपोथेटिकली, मैं एक हाइपोथेटिकल, 4 बार, 4 बार में मैं कोशिश करता हूँ कि एटलीस्ट 2 बार मैं सिर्फ तंदूरी चीजें खाऊं, लाइक सीख कबाब या रेशमी कबाब या पनीर टिक्का या वट एवर. सी, सो मैं रोटी चावल बटर चिकन बटर नान टच ही नहीं करता हूँ, मैं स्टार्टर खा खा के आ जाता हूँ. तो आई डोंट नो
एनीथिंग
इफ आई
विद
एम
द
राइट और
ग्रेवी
रॉन्ग.
इज ऑलवेज हैज अ लॉट ऑफ पोटेंशियल टू हाइड थिंग्स व्हिच यू विल नॉट नो वेयर इन अ तंदूरी थिंग. ऑफ कोर्स दे डू बेस्ट इट विद अ लॉट ऑफ बटर व्हिच इज व्हाई इट टेस्ट्स गुड. But at least there's not too many things hiding. You know, there's not much to hide.
And I am like, ये ऐसा एक, दिस इज, यू नो, दिस इज लाइक दैट अभिमन्यु चक्रव्यूह के अंदर जाने और बाहर आने का रास्ता किसी को मालूम नहीं है. एंड एवरी सिंगल टाइम आई लुक एट इट. नाउ आई वांटेड टू डिस्कस, व्हिच इज व्हाई आई हैड मैसेज यू आल्सो. आई वांट टू स्पेंड सम टाइम ऑन दिस वन पर्टिकुलर प्रोडक्ट व्हिच इज शुगर. रिसेंटली वो क्या था, एस्पर्टीन का पेपर भी आया था, आपको पता होगा. Now I am one of those rare species. मैंने एक्चुअली वो पेपर पढ़ा. आई एक्चुअली वेंट देयर, डाउनलोडेड द पेपर. फर्स्ट थिंग आई फाउंड आउट, इट्स ऑन रैट्स, इट्स नॉट ऑन ह्यूमंस. अभी तक ह्यूमन ट्रायल्स हुए भी नहीं है. सेकेंडली द डोसेज रिकमेंडेड, आई वाज लाइक, आहा, इतनी डोसेज एस्पर्टीन की. मैंने बोला मैं क्या करने क्या वाला हूँ इसका, इतनी एस्पर्टीन का.
I did make a video on this.
या आई नो.
Because one famous, I will not name that person, he had put out one video. Did you know that this diet coke? I mean, but from this tone, you would have understood who I'm talking about. So I just made like a response video to that, saying, it needs these many X number of tablets, which I've forgotten the exact number, but it was in excess of 200, and like 36 cans of diet coke per day to come anywhere close to the, limit. So, like, unless if you're drinking 36 cans, then please, evaluate yourself and figure out why are you doing this. But this one odd Diet Coke here and there, I may get, I hope nobody gives me galis for this, but one Diet Coke is that has whatever little aspartame is definitely better than a regular Diet Coke. I mean,
Coke,
a regular Coke,
Coke.
which has like 9, 10 spoons of sugar.
It's
So
insane.
that tiny aspartame is not going to do anything to you, but
Yeah.
that much sugar is not good in
Yes.
the long run.
Yeah, exactly.
Even
And
then,
which is
if you had once in a while, if you're having Coke once in a few months, please drink regular Coke and make it up by eating healthy. For the rest of, don't have that Coke and dessert and everything and make it like an overload. But be careful about your overall food. Look at it from the bigger picture. But this one Diet Coke once in a while, it's not going to kill anybody.
exactly, but how do we, okay, what do we do about sugar then? How, because at the end of the day, from what I have understood, is sugar in any form, at the end of the day, is sugar, right? I mean, आप वो फ्रूट के फॉर्म में खा रहे हो या किस फॉर्म में खा रहे हो, है तो वो शुगर ही. तो फिर सो हाउ व्हाई इज द डिस्कोर्स ऑन शुगर, लाइक इफ these people exactly knew what they were doing when they discovered processed sugar. This is like, this is next level cocaine. Let me put this in everything for these humans, because these parents will just go on taking it.
Yeah, so see, ultimately, I think the word sugar has become like a cigarette or something which has this instant thing in your head that, hey, danger. You know, that skull and crossbones kind of, especially to those who are very health conscious, who are very much in tune with the current health communications going on around us. We need to understand that yes, sugar is processed from sugarcane, etc. But ultimately, what is it? It is a carbohydrate. It is a simple carbohydrate. It is the same. If you're not so dead scared of eating white rice, you should not be so scared of sugar also. It is the same thing. It is a carbohydrate. Yes, it has immense addictive potential. Like you said, it's like the next cocaine. So sometimes it becomes very difficult for people to stop. There are people who drink lots of cold drinks, sodas and colas, sorry. There is no limit in that. So in which case it becomes too much to handle by the body. Now, sugar is like the common energy currency for every life form on this planet. And if it were so dangerous and if it were so deadly, then every life form would not be using it to survive, right? So, but in the modern day lifestyle, what happens is that there are infinite distractions and temptations, sorry, and for overconsumption happens ultimately. So, because if you're also eating rice, you're eating roti, you're eating aloo, you're eating something else, then you're eating dessert in which there's sugar, you've definitely eaten too much sugar. By sugar, I mean carbohydrate. I'm not talking about sugar as the ingredient. And, again, like we discussed earlier, each of us are so different. There are some people who eat so much carbohydrate and still they are stick thin because their body carb tolerance is very high. And there are people who even see rice, they will put on weight because their body's carb tolerance is very low. So it again depends on how, for example, me, I would rather have like 2 cups of tea in a day and 1 teaspoon of sugar in my tea. That makes me feel very good. I feel very happy with that cup of tea, and it's possibly my indulgence. It's my moment of calm in the day. And I would not want to take, I mean, I can drink without sugar. I don't have a problem, but it really tastes good with sugar, the proper adrak chai. And I don't mean the tea bag wala chai. But so it's I would rather skip dessert, but I will have that tea, and it's just 1 spoon of sugar. And if I'm eating so much more fiber and protein in the day, I'm not going to demonize that one thing and, self-flagellate myself for enjoying that 1 cup of tea. So I think what we need to understand is like other carbs which come with more fiber, what happens with simple sugar is that it straight goes into your bloodstream. There is hardly any digestive effort required. Within 15 minutes or 10 minutes of eating, it has spiked your blood sugar. So if you're someone, and it's also more so in foods like desserts made with plain flour or maida, or jisme maida hai, sugar hai, and these kind of all refined carbohydrates coming together in a very tasty, delicious package. And if you repeatedly keep flogging that cycle, blood sugar spike, insulin spike, ultimately insulin resistance develops, which is the which is the gateway into all metabolic disorders. So I think when people understand this better, you know how to control or like go cold turkey the way you say it works for you. But otherwise, it's fine. So also trying to understand not to eat, not to start your day with sugar. So this is what the continuous glucose monitor helped me understand, that even though I've finished my food at say 7:30 at night, and I'm having my cup of tea at say 5:30 in the morning, which is after 10 hours, ideally my blood sugar has gone down to 70 or whatever in the night, or less than 70, and then I'm having my cup of tea, it straight goes off to 110 or something with that one spoon of sugar. Of course, it has come down equally quick. And then I realized that if I'm eating 4 or 5 almonds while the tea is getting ready, I eat 4 or 5 almonds or peanuts or whatever I can get my hands on, and then I have my tea, there is hardly much of a spike. So it is to understand that how to combine, even if you want dessert, if you have eaten a nice protein and fiber-rich meal and you're eating your dessert after that, it is not going to spike because the food, stomach is not having different compartment where sugar isme dalunga, protein isme dalunga. Ultimately, everything is getting churned in your stomach together, and the fiber and the protein and the fat, they kind of neutralize the effect of sugar, or they kind of slow it down considerably. That this dessert that you ate, a small portion, of course, is not going to spike your blood sugar like crazy because it's having the cushion of this fat, this fiber, this protein, all the veggies and everything that you ate. So I think people who really like their sweets and who feel very happy eating them in, of course, in moderation, should know how to time it and how to eat it so that you can still have your cake and not like completely shoo it away from your life. And even this is true for like birthday parties and all. Like if you have fried potato wafers and you have the cake, and you should know what to eat it with, or look for better options to pair with sugar, and not keep eating sugar on an empty stomach, not eating too much of refined sugar and refined products like desserts, which are very nutritionally poor but calorie and sugar-wise dense. So I think following these simple things, because we have developed a very dysfunctional relationship with sugar. So we feel like, oh, sugar, no. And there are people who don't eat sugar. I don't know if you behave this way, but there are people in a party or something, if they don't eat, they'll make it a point to make you feel very shitty about eating sugar because they say, I never eat sugar, and it just makes, I mean, they make you feel like you are some lesser mortal for even adding sugar to your tea. Because yeah, ultimately it gives us that dopamine high, and anything that we completely say, no, you are never going to eat that in your life, that is the first thing you'll be thinking about. If something is there, chocolate or something in your fridge, that will keep calling out to you. But if you have told yourself that, yeah, I can eat a little bit and I've eaten and I'm fine now, trust me, those things will not call out to you. So I think improving our relationship with these foods, I mean, food in general, but also these kind of demonized foods, we need to understand we also need some enjoyment in our life through food, and it's all not just, we are all not monks and so austere that we can only eat salads and protein and that kind of stuff. And we just need to have a better relationship, keep it more controlled instead of letting it go out of control.
How much do you think working out or a workout routine is a important part of nutrition per se? Because in my case, what I used to do was I used to just walk, 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 walk. Now I've done 4 days of walking or 3 days of walking, and 2 days I do some weight training exercises. I don't go to a gym. I don't like going to a gym. I don't like the idea of having 50, 60 people around me. Everybody's looking at each other. I'm like, kya bhai, dekh kyun raha hai? Itna kya hai mere mein? So I don't like that idea. I just have two 10 kg dumbbells at home and I do all my workout based on that. I had a trainer for a while. Now I do it myself. Whatever I like, I do. Like I'll do thrusters, some push-ups or basic things. I managed to do that. Now the thing is, when it comes to nutrition, a lot of mental health and physical health issues are kind of parallel to it, right? How does one explain that to the average person?
See, if you had to choose one between nutrition and workout, if you told me just choose one, I would say look at your food first. If you just even can't work out, if you can't do anything, changing your food will improve your lifestyle a great deal. But only working out and eating crap food is not going to help you at all. So if you had to do just one thing, you can just focus on your food. And if you are actually spending time in the gym or if you're spending time working out, then not having a good diet to go with that is that waste of that 1 hour in the gym, because good workout always has to be supplemented by a good diet. So be it protein or watching what you eat to some extent. So I feel that definitely I realized, and it's again a constant learning. I used to just be on the treadmill or walking all year, but now as I'm entering my late 40s, I realize the importance of weight training. And I have a very good coach, so he keeps, the minute he sees that I'm comfortable with the weight, he will keep on adding weights. So I feel that that just gives you tremendous self-confidence, one, in the ability of your own body. Like lifting, currently lifting my own body weight and aiming to go double my body weight in a deadlift or something as my goal, I feel extremely empowered. And I think the most important thing as we age, and we currently, we are still in a age where we think that looks are important and we should look toned and we should look this way. But I think ultimately we have to think about when we cross 65, 70, and we hear all these stories about how our Indian senior citizens, they are the first ones to be on the wheelchair in the airports and all that, because just walking those long stretches, pulling your bags, just the being self-sufficient for your own body. I think that is so important. And for that, it's only muscles that are going to see you through. Being just able to sit down, get up, walk, manage your own self as you age. I think, of course, no age is early enough to start weight training. My teenage son already thinks it's very important for him, and he's not a vain person, so he realizes it's good for health. And I'm very happy to see that a lot of teenagers, right from when they are 15, 16, girls, boys, both, they are all into weight training. And I realized that it's okay, it's not too late. I have done it in my 30s, then I gave up because I didn't see the value in it, but now I know the true value. And I feel if I have to choose between cardio and weight training, I will choose weight training any day. Because I know that it's good for my long term. I need to preserve my muscle mass, and it gives me mobility, it gives me flexibility, and I need to have that for my future years. And of course, walking, we all do, and we should be doing, and not sitting. Like sitting is the new smoking, which everybody has heard of that. And just this work from home, sitting in one place, that for that Apple Watch, the rings are very useful to tell you that, hey, you were literally standing and you were moving around every waking hour. I feel that's my standard, and that's how I am. I can't just be in one place ever. So I think that's very important for people not to just sit around all day. And so apart from working out, because I was researching this for a column I wrote, and even if you're putting in 1 to 2 hours of workout in the gym, or if you're on the treadmill, but the rest of the day you're sitting, that 1 hour in the gym is not compensating for the whole day of sitting. It's still going to have all its bad side effects in terms of metabolic disorders and stuff like that. So keep on moving through the day. I think these are the, again, simple things again within the realm of moderation that I think people should practice.
So before we wrap things up, I wanted to discuss this maybe as the last segment. How does one, let's say I'm my listener base to everyone's utter shock is actually not under 25. 65 to 70% of my listener base is 25 and above. So I actually don't have the youth with me. So the youth is with the other content creators. Fortunately or unfortunately is for others to decide. But this comes from a very, married man perspective and married woman perspective question. You're married, you have household responsibilities, you have kids, you have many other things. Now, and these are majority people that might write to you or might listen to me and might be looking up to you. So if I am now speaking on behalf of that group and asking you this question, that if I was to come to you and ask you, Dr. Iyer, you are qualified. Okay, I will not listen to crazy people or Instagram. But then, Dr. Iyer, tell me, how do I go about living my life so that I can be healthy and happy at the same time?
So again, what I say is nothing that you haven't heard of, or it's nothing earth-shattering, breaking news kind of stuff. But it's all to do with our food, our movement, and how good we keep ourselves stress-free. So in terms of food, some very basic things to follow is that pay attention when you're eating. So you know when you're nearly 80% full stop. I always say, don't be the last person to leave the party. So leave the party when it's there somewhere, and don't wait for everyone to go. So just don't wait until you've finished your whole plate or you're feeling stuffed to stop eating. Research shows that if you eat a little less, people who eat little less are going to live longer than people who are always overstuffed. The second thing is when you eat, I'm giving the slightly more mindfulness related things, because what to eat and all that is like, again, specific from person to person, and mostly everybody knows what is it to eat. They're just not implementing it, right? So the second thing is eat socially. I think when we eat alone, or when we're eating with our favorite series on Netflix or looking at a screen, we have no control on how much we are eating. And we're kind of also using food as a crutch. We are using the screen as a crutch. So when we are eating with friends and all that, we are laughing, we are talking. So we are eating as a whole experience and not just, stuffing ourselves. So I read this beautiful thing somewhere that eating salad in a hurry is not necessarily better than eating fish and chips with your friends in a relaxed, fun atmosphere. So that is very important to be mindful about how you're eating, how much you're eating, are you eating alone? The third important thing is that, believe it or not, a lot of us are emotional eaters these days. We are not necessarily eating because we are hungry, which is why things like intermittent fasting help, like force plug that problem by saying, hey, you are not eating for 12 hours or 16 hours in the day. But if you don't have that kind of forced, like enforcement on yourself, we are constantly feeding our feelings. We are hungry, we are angry, we are eating, we are bored, we are finding something to eat, and we're just using it as a crutch all the time. So I think knowing the response to each feeling, that if I'm feeling very disturbed and I'm anxious, I'll go for a walk. If I'm bored, I'll call my friend. If I'm feeling something else. So to having a plan in mind that for everything, food is not the answer. It should not be the answer. So don't use food when you're hungry. Don't use food for other things. So I think that itself will cut out a lot of our junk food eating ultra processed food. Like I said, if I'm bored, I'm never going for a broccoli, right? Or a banana. I'm going to eat a chips, or I'm going to eat something that's like fun stuff like ice cream or something that's in the freezer. So keep food for hunger only. And then other important thing is, don't just eat one kind of food. Make it a diverse plate. Now this is more towards the nutrition angle. the more kinds of food you eat, the more different micronutrients you get. We don't need to know that what is there in that, what is there in this. Just make sure you are eating different things. The problem with ordering on apps is the algorithm just shows me the top five things I order every time, and it makes me just order those things. But like when you go to an outside market or something, you will be exposed to a more wide range of seasonal vegetables and fruits and produce. So it's a good idea to step out sometime and shop from there. And I think also very important to learn how to cook, because being dependent on a cook or ordering food all the time is not the greatest for you, because you don't know what exactly is happening. I've had a cook for a short period of time, and I realized it was really messing with my health, because they want to cook very fast and they'll add a lot of oil. They'll keep it on the highest flame and just be very quick with it. And there is, I realized that that's not good. Okay, I can understand with very busy people, then you really need to monitor, tell them this much oil per day. You can't give them a free rein to cook, because they are not interested in your well-being. They're just interested in doing their job quickly and going away. So
Yeah.
diverse, knowing what goes into food, knowing how to cook, again, very important. And the ancestor thing, sticking to more whole foods and staying away from ultra processed will also make you eat more whole foods. Again, it's the gut bacteria that demand more of what you feed. If I'm constantly eating chips, my gut bacteria is also going to say, hey, get me that flavor of chips, and I'm going to be craving for that. So the more whole foods we eat, it's just it just feeds. It's like it's in that positive feedback loop. And the most important thing is sleep. I see people on Twitter like, I wake up very early, and when I wake up, people in India are still awake to eating. So I feel like this is not a good thing. And it's also become a way of telling, hey, I'm so busy, I stay up all night and all that, and that's nothing great. And your everything could be right, your nutrition, your movement, your this thing. But if you're not sleeping enough, it's the easiest way to die quickly, and to put it in the very simple terms. Longevity and good health, immunity, everything depends on sleep. So I think there's also a study, if I remember right, it said that if you sleep for around 2 to 2.5 hours less, say you're used to 8 hours of sleep and you slept for 5.5 to 6 hours of sleep only, the next day it has been proven that you'll eat at least 20% more calories, because that whole leptin, ghrelin, the satiety and the hunger hormone balance is completely out of whack. And this is why sleep and your food and weight is so interrelated, and we don't give enough importance to sleep. So I think all of this, these are some basic principles of moderation. And like I said, again, do whatever works for you. Eat the foods that make you happy, closer to the whole foods, and use the methods that work for you. If cold turkey works for you in terms of abstaining from certain foods that aren't good for you, so be it. But if you think you can deal with a moderation of, taking things once in a while, but overall a healthy diet, 80% whole foods or 20% indulgence, so be it. But again, it requires certain degree of reflection and self-awareness to understand what is moderation for your life, your likings, and your health goals.
Fair enough. Dr. Iyer, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. I hope and wish, can't say pray, I don't pray. So I hope and wish that more and more people listen to sane voices like yours and don't fall for the sensationalism. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. I mean, I try my best. I know you try your best in your own way to a insert a dose of rationality into the cacophony of social media hyperbole. And when I say social media, I mean, both video, audio, text content, everything. It's just it's the wild west out there. And I once again thank you for coming, and it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. And now that you've come, I'll keep calling you again and again to eat your brains.
Sure. Thanks for having me over, Kushal. It was lovely discussing this very favorite topic of mine with you. And yes, I look forward to being invited again too.
Great. So guys, before we wrap up, again, in the description of the podcast, it doesn't matter if you're watching this on YouTube or listening to the audio version, you'll have Dr. Iyer's Twitter handle, Instagram handle. I'll also leave the links to Dr. Iyer's books, the Amazon links, so you can go buy her books, follow her on Instagram, follow her on Twitter. And as far as I'm concerned, you know the drill. If you want to support the Charvak podcast, you can become a member on YouTube, Patreon, Fanmo, wherever you want to. If you want to buy Charvak podcast merchandise, go to kushalmehra.com. If you want to send donations to UPI, you have kushalmehra@ICICI. If you can't do anything, just leave a rating or if you're an audio listener. And you can like, subscribe to the channel on YouTube. Leave the comments in the comment section. I'll see you guys next time. Until then, namaste. Take care. Bye-bye.